Going to be reading from Luke 14, 25 through 35. Now large crowds were traveling with him, and he turned and said to them, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost, to see whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king going out to wage war against another king will not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000? If he cannot, then while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for the terms of peace. So therefore, none of you can become my disciples if you do not give up all your possessions. Salt is good, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is fit neither for the soil nor the manure pile. They throw it away. Let anyone with ears to hear listen." The price of discipleship. Some time ago, Time Magazine ran a survey. They gave a list of 100 events to some people and asked them to rank them according to what they thought was the most important to the least important. And Christopher Columbus and the discovery of America came out number one. But then there were three events that tied for 14th. Discovery of X-rays, the Wright brothers' first flight, and the crucifixion of Christ. Tied for 14th, the crucifixion of Christ. When in my mind, it should have been the most important event out of the 100 events that they gave those people. And that kind of tells us something, that we as Christians are not doing a good job of communicating about Christ. We're not getting out into the community and we're not communicating about Christianity. We're not telling people about it. And I know it takes courage to talk to some people sometimes, but like I tell people when they say, "Well, what if they get upset or what if they get angry? What if they say, 'Leave me alone?'" Fine. You did what you were supposed to do. You tried to talk to them about Christ. And that's what is important. We have to be committed as Christians to go out and spread the gospel. And that's what Jesus is telling us. That in order to be a disciple of Christ, you have to be willing to do anything for Him. Even if it means not doing something that you had planned for today because something came up where you needed to go talk to somebody about Christianity. And when he talks about hating your mother and father and brother and sister and all that stuff, he is not really talking about you hating them in the way we interpret the word hate today. What he is talking about is you have to be willing to leave them or even go against them if that is what is required to be a good Christian disciple. That's what he's talking about. There's a neat little story about a young man named Milton Cunningham. He was a missionary. And he was getting on a flight from Dallas to Atlanta. And when he got comfortable on the plane, sitting in the middle seat, there was a little girl sitting next to him that had Down syndrome. Sweet, innocent little girl. And after they got kind of settled, she turned to Milton and she said, "Mister, did you brush your teeth this morning?" He said, "Well, yes, I always brush my teeth in the morning." She said, "Good, because that's what you're supposed to do." And then she said, "Mister, do you smoke?" He said, "Well, no, I don't smoke." She said, "Good, because smoking will kill you." And then here comes the third question. She said, "Mister, do you love Jesus?" And he said, "Well, of course I love Jesus." "Good, because we are supposed to love Jesus. That is important." In the meantime, another man settles down in the aisle seat next to Milton, and he's intent on reading his magazine. He doesn't want to be bothered. But this little girl keeps poking Milton in the side and says, "Ask him the question." So finally he turns to the man. He says, "This little girl wants to know if you brushed your teeth this morning." He said, "Well, yes, I brushed my teeth this morning." "Good, because that's what you're supposed to do." And she kept prodding him. She said, "Okay, this little girl wants to know if you smoke." He says, "Well, no, I don't smoke." "Okay, that's good." And she kept poking him. And he goes, "Wait, I don't think that's right. That's getting personal with him, and I don't think I should ask him that question." But she kept on. So finally he turned to the man. He says, "This little girl wants to know, do you love Jesus?" And the man got this solemn look on his face. And he turned to Milton and he said, "Why, yes. I have been wanting to learn more about God and more about Christ. I wasn't sure where to find that information and who to talk to. I've been wanting to learn how to love Christ more." So him and Milton on their flight to Atlanta had a pretty good conversation. And Milton, being this missionary, talked to him about how to believe in Christ and love Christ more. So that's a neat little story, but the thing about it, if you remember, Milton is a missionary. And it seemed kind of odd that this little girl had to keep poking him in the side to get him to ask the man next to him if he loved Jesus. How many of us are like that? We know we should talk to people about Jesus. We know we should talk to people about Christianity. But we just kind of, I don't think I should do that. What if they get mad at me? Or what if they get upset? What if they are offended, which is a common thing today? If I want to talk to somebody about Christ and they get offended, tough. That is not my problem. That is their problem. But we've got to get away from this thing in society where we're so afraid to talk about Christianity. That's what's wrong in our churches today. That's why we see so many empty pews, because people aren't willing to talk to others about Christianity. People that haven't been coming to church, we aren't checking on them to see, why did you quit coming to church? What can we do to make you feel better about coming to church? We've got to get out there and talk about Christianity. It's important. We have to be willing to give anything for that. There's another young man named Lou Marshall. He was a student at Yale Divinity School. And while he was in school, he worked in the inner city in New York, a really rough neighborhood. But in his work in this slum area, he was working with the gangs and trying to get them to behave. And he had worked through getting these two gangs that were going to be fighting each other. There was about to be a big rumble. He managed to talk them out of it and get them to not do it. Well, several of the gang members didn't like that. They didn't like the idea that he had stopped this fight. So they met him on a dark street one evening and they beat him severely and left him there on the broken street, a broken man, blood pouring from his body. He died the next day. And when they did his memorial service, Reverend Moody, the pastor of the church in Greenwood Village where they did this, said, "Lou's death is a testimony of how, as human beings and a city of people, how to build a place where people can dwell together in peace. Some people will say that the crumbling pavement on which he died wasn't worth his life so full of promise and hope. Others might say that he was foolish to become involved in a way that was so dangerous. Still, I believe that That street has been made more holy because a man's blood was shed. A man who had the courage to stand there for what he believed was right. Early Christians believed that because of the shedding of blood, Jesus Christ, the world would be different and a better place. Peter wrote, "You were ransomed from your futile ways, not with perishable things such as silver and gold, but with the precious blood of Christ." That's the kind of sacrifice that Jesus is talking about. Not that I advocate you going out and getting yourself killed, but you should be willing to get into those neighborhoods. You should be willing to talk to anybody about Christianity and try and help them to understand about love and peace. The cross means God sees us as a personal worth. He personally sees us as a vital worth, or he wouldn't have done what he did, giving his son to be sacrificed on the cross, spilling his own son's blood to save us. A race that probably didn't deserve it. It's tough sometimes when you think about the things that are done in this world by good people, for people who probably didn't deserve it. There was a captain in World War II that saw a sergeant get struck and wounded out on the field. So he ran out there to get this sergeant and drag him back out of harm's way, and in the meantime, caught a bullet himself, and a few days later died. The sergeant that he saved, however, made a full recovery and returned home. Well, one day, the mom and dad of the captain invited the sergeant over for dinner. They just wanted to see what kind of a man he was that their son had given his life to save. And when he finally got there, this former sergeant got there, he was late, for one thing. He was half intoxicated and very impolite. Well, they went ahead and sat down to a beautiful dinner, and he immediately got up and left, didn't say thank you or anything. And this captain's mom broke into tears. To think that our son had to die to save a thing like that. And you can kind of make that comparison with Christ giving his life to save a thing like us. To save a society that we live in today. A society that is falling from Christ. Moving away from Christ. Churches are dying because we are not making Christ a priority. We have to make it a priority. There was a woman who was vacationing in Florida, and she was going through one of these junk teak stores, and she found this very valuable piece of art. Well, she cabled back to her husband about the art and how she would like to buy this art. And she got a telegram that said, "No price too high." So when she got home and had that expensive piece of art with her, her husband had a fit. He says, "I sent a telegram and told you no price too high." She said, "Wait a minute." And she still had the telegram with her, so she showed him and it said, "No price too high." So her husband immediately learned the lesson of punctuation, because it was supposed to be no, price too high. But what that compares to is God, the way he looks at us. He doesn't say no, price too high. He says no price too high. He gave his son to save us, no price too high. We are of vital worth to God, very important to God. He sees us in a special way. He doesn't see maybe bad things in us. He sees the good in us. Like the young man that appeared at his girlfriend's door one evening and she wasn't expecting him. She'd been teasing her hair. Most of you know what teasing your hair is. I don't think you do that anymore. Women used to just rat their hair up so they make it look full. She came to the door and his hair was sticking out all different ways. And she was so shocked that here's her boyfriend. She couldn't think of anything else to say. So she says, "How do you like my hair?" And her boyfriend very diplomatically looked at her and said, "Well, it looks as if it's about to become something wonderful." And that's God. He doesn't see the teased hair. He doesn't see the things that we do, we know we shouldn't do. He looks at us and says, "It looks as if it's about to become something wonderful." And that's how he looks at us. Something wonderful. Madame Marie Curie, I don't know how much you might know about her. When she was in college, her professor told her that some of you have stars at your fingertips. Well, she took that to heart. And when she met Pierre Curie and they got married, they reached for the stars. They tried to do great things together, and they almost starved. They got very discouraged, but one morning they went back into their lab and they noticed in their evaporation dish these green glowing goo, and realized they had discovered a new element, radium, something that is extremely important in our work today. It's used in X-ray machines and all different kinds of things. They discovered radium because they reached for the stars, because that professor had made an impression on Marie Curie about some of you have stars at your fingertips. Some of you have stars at your fingertips. You can do great things for Christ if you just reach for it and do it. The other thing is we know we have to take up the cross of Christ. We have to be willing to take up his cross and carry it. It's saddening to go into a church where they're singing a song like "Jesus bear the cross alone and all the world go free," like it was a funeral dirge. It's not. The cross is important, and Jesus doesn't bear it alone. We bear it with him. That's the intent. We are a great sculpture or sculptor for God if we get out there and use our talents to do that. And we've all got talent for some thing or another to do things for God. Bertoldo di Giovanni, you probably don't know that name. He was Michelangelo's teacher. He knew Michelangelo had great potential. He was a gifted artist. But Michelangelo was piddling around with simple stuff. Where Bertoldo walked into the studio one day and saw Michelangelo fiddling around with some cheap sculpture and immediately grabbed a hammer, ran over and destroyed that sculpture. Looked at Michelangelo and says, "Listen, talent is cheap. Dedication is costly. To be dedicated and committed to a task is costly. To be committed to be a disciple of Christ is costly. If you don't believe that," Matthew found out the cost at the end of the sword in Ethiopia. Mark lost his life at the hands of a mob in Alexandria. Luke was hanged on an olive tree in Greece. It cost the Apostle John banishment on the Isle of Patmos. The once doubting Thomas paid the price on a lance. James the Greater decapitated at Jerusalem. James the Less was thrown from the pinnacle of the temple and then clubbed to death. Bartholomew was filleted alive. Peter was crucified in Rome with his head downward. Andrew witnessed to Christ right up to the moment of his own death on a cross. Jude was shot with an arrow. make no mistake about it, discipleship has a cost. That gospel that we treasure, the Christ that we love, that price was paid for in blood. It takes commitment. It takes availability to serve Christ. The message of the cross is we have to believe in it. We have to believe in it so much that we are willing to do anything for it. That means if you want to raise Christian children, you have to act like a Christian. That means if you want a church to be vital and alive in the community, you have to get involved. You know the old saying that 20% of the people do 80% of the work? It's true. If you want your church to be more vital, you have to get involved. Think about Thursday night I mentioned earlier. We need to get together as a church. We need to talk about how we can revitalize this church. And if that means you miss a show on TV or you miss something else, then that's just how it is. You have to be willing to pay that cost to serve Christ. Now, I'm not going to belittle anybody or badger you into coming Thursday night, but I would pray that each of you feel the need to help your church grow. That's the cost of discipleship. You cannot serve the church from your armchair with a remote control. The kingdom of God is a pearl of great price. And you remember the story in the Bible, the parable in the Bible about that pearl. The man gave everything to get that pearl. No price too high. There is no price too high to pay to serve Christ. That's what Christianity is about. That's what the cost of discipleship is. We have to be willing to pay that. We have to be willing to love Christ, be committed to Christ, and be willing to serve Christ. That is the way of the cross. Amen.